Oahu resident Jeff Dunster and his business partner Daryl Fox had a vision, and they acted on it by creating the Hawaiian Reforestation Initiative, a nonprofit organization with a prime mission to save the Earth's precious resources one tree at a time. And their prime target is the exotic koa and sandalwood tree. And the brilliance of their reforestation program is that 3/4 of all trees planted are designated as legacy trees, and they will live on forever. Come along and join Jeff Dunster at the Westin Moana Surfrider Hotel in the heart of Waikiki for a fascinating conversation as Dunster talks story about the vision behind the Reforestation Initiative's roots and its future growth on the flanks of Mauna Kea on the Big Island and upcoming reforestation projects on Oahu. Tell us a little backstory.
My business partner, Daryl Fox, and I decided to retire and go plant trees. And it was a retirement plan that went seriously wrong because we work longer and harder now than we probably ever did in our career. But it's energizing. It's what we're doing is definitely for the greater good. And it's exciting to find ways to put forests back in place and do them debt-free. And for us, it was a challenge. And now the new challenge is, since we've figured out how to do that, is see how many trees we can put in the ground.
Really started when you realized the demise of the koa tree, right?
Yeah, it was really sad, actually. And unfortunately, I was part of the demise because the demand for koa is growing. And I, like most people in the islands, love koa furniture. And so we realized we were actually part of the problem. And that was where we started to identify where we could come up with ways to solve the problems.
Tell us what you did in your project on Mauna Kea.
So what we did is we designed a model, a business model for restoring forests that would not only put endemic forests back in place, but when completed, they would have zero debt and they would actually generate their own income stream, which would pay for their own maintenance in perpetuity. And the perpetuity thing is where it gets a little sticky because that's a very long time, as we all know. And we found that the linkage that we were able to put together, which is a series of 4 to 5 different components, income streams, if you will, were able to keep these forests intact. There was a sustainable harvest model, which we limited to 25% of what we did. There was a legacy tree component. And the legacy tree component is where individuals can sponsor a single tree. And because of our technology, people will actually be able to follow their tree online. Each tree is RFID tagged, so it's very easy to keep track of your own individual tree.
State it the same way in another direction, is 3 out of 4 trees will never be harvested.
Yes, that's correct.
So the 25% that do get harvested, does that help to underwrite and sustain the legacy?
It does. That was where you pay for fencing and all the things that need to be in place for any forest. Just to put it in perspective, to date we have installed just under 24 miles of fencing. And when you figure that a foot of fencing costs about $10.50, it turns into a real number very quickly. So the sustainable harvest model basically paid for the infrastructure that would maintain that forest beyond the sustainable harvest process.
Let's talk about the legacy trees, because I think it's a win-win, because people love it. As you know, my wife and I have one that we planted in honor of Beth's mom, and that tree will stay there forever.
Yes, it will. And what's amazing is when you stand there and you look out, and to date we have planted about 320,000 trees, and you realize every tree out there has a story to tell. It's really remarkable. And we're starting to catalog those trees now. As people plant them, we will record their words, we'll videotape them planting the tree, and that information will be tied to that tree. So in the future, there will be applications on your cell phone, for instance, where you can walk through the forest. And you can turn on this app, and it will tell you stories about the trees as you walk by them, or video if you prefer.
And even today, with your RFID chip, when somebody goes home, they could go onto Google Earth, and they could watch their tree grow?
They can, and what we've found is we've actually surpassed Google Earth's abilities, and we're now starting to do our own aerial photography, and we're working with Google to download our images onto their platform. And what's really exciting about it is the level of granularity that you can get through these low-level flights that we're providing. With Google Earth, if you were to look at a tree from space, it would look like a little green dot, and you might see a shadow, but that's about it. The resolution that we can offer would be something on the order of, if you were to zoom in on your tree, you would not only see your tree, but you could see the individual leaves on the trees.
Another aspect of your model that I absolutely love gets back to your nonprofit momentum. And as I recall, for each legacy tree planted, a certain percentage, you can tell me exactly what it is donated to the nonprofit of your choice. And that's what, 25, 30%?
It works out to about 35%. It's $20 for every legacy tree.
And how much does it cost to plant a legacy tree?
It's $60 to plant a legacy tree.
And again, out of that, off the top, goes 35% to nonprofit of your choice, and could be any bona fide nonprofit.
Yeah, and through that program, I think we are currently supporting about 335 charities worldwide with that program.
So they love you and you love them.
It's a love-love relationship. We actually, this past year, we have set up our own nonprofit, so even though there's still the component in there to give $20 of every legacy tree to the charity of your choice, the other 40 goes to the Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative, which is also a 501c3. So now, in essence, the entire purchase price of the tree is tax deductible.
Oh, that's really cool. So yeah, you can't, pretty pain-free giving.
It really is. And it just, there's new ideas that seem to be developing almost daily with different ways that we can tie people in with the forest and make it real for them rather than just sort of a static, I'm going to do this and I know somewhere out there maybe somebody planted a tree.
Let's back up way back in time. Before the denuding of the hardwoods, what was it like up on Mauna Kea, and why did forests go away?
Well, the particular lands that we're planting on Hawaii Island were actually owned by King Kamehameha the Great, and it was his own private koa forest. And there's only been six owners, including him, since that time. As it changed hands, new owners would do different things with the lands. For the past 100 years or so, the land has been ranching. Cattle are devastating to forests. And after 100 years of doing that, there wasn't much left to work with. But we found some incredible seed sources available still in the gulches where the cattle couldn't get to the trees. And we used those as the genetic material to reestablish the forest. And we think because those seeds were on property, the genetics were perfectly matched for the lands. And I think that's a very large reason why the forest was so successful in coming back with such a fervor.
There's another exotic hardwood that was just revered to the point of extinction almost, and that's sandalwood. Let's talk about sandalwood.
Sandalwood was actually an income stream for the Hawaiian monarchy. It had such demand, mainly in Asia, that it was harvested almost to extinction here in Hawaii. Most people didn't bother to replant sandalwood because it's such a slow-growing tree that their thinking was, well, if there's an economic value, I won't live long enough to see it. But with this model, we're not planting these trees for harvest. We're planting them for the sake of planting endemic forests, and therefore, whether they grow quickly or grow slowly, or big or small, is irrelevant to us.
All of the sandalwood plantings that you're doing are legacy trees?
They are, every one of them. To date, I know we've planted more sandalwood than anyone else in the state of Hawaii. And that sounds impressive, but it's really kind of an abysmal number. I think we've only planted about 15 or 16,000 sandalwood trees so far. But our goal is 400,000.
Going forward, you've almost planted out the least land that you control on Mauna Kea. But you have some hope and opportunity in neighboring properties, correct?
We do. There have been many organizations, land trusts, government agencies that are interested in seeing this model replicated on other lands, not just on Hawaii Island, but on many of the Hawaiian islands.
One of the other things that I think is just incredibly no-brainer but brilliant has to do with carbon offset credits.
That was basically the closing of the loop that we were talking about earlier, where trying to find a way in perpetuity to keep forests financially stable. And for us, that was the carbon credit. Carbon markets created an interesting opportunity for the forest, and that we realized that through the sale of carbon, for every year of carbon that we could generate by reforestation, it would give us 3 years worth of income to maintain that forest. And so with a 50-year carbon project, that would give us resources for the next 150 years. Beyond that, somebody else will figure out what to do to keep the forest alive after that. But for us, the carbon, the real challenge was the fact that no one in Hawaii had ever been able to successfully certify a carbon project.
Which you have.
Which we have, yes. We did this past June. As a matter of fact, we certified with the gold standard, and the gold standard is arguably the toughest standard on earth. As a matter of fact, we were the first ones in all of North America to ever certify under the gold standard for a forestry project.
What's the hoop you have to jump through to be gold standard?
Well, there's lots of hoops, but if you ask me to kind of summarize, it would be sort of like going through an IRS audit and a colonoscopy simultaneously, if that helps. There's a visual you won't be able to get rid of. But the carbon component was key to maintaining these forests. And it also has been key for other landowners who are looking at this as a way for themselves not only to be good stewards of their land, but to be able to generate an income off of that for their children and possibly their children's children.
Let's start with the Big Island, with Mauna Kea. People, civilians, tourists, can come up and tour your property, right, and see the trees, and you have a little visitor center. Give us a word picture of somebody that would be interested in coming up.
Well, we've heard it described as a living Hallmark moment. People come up, and you're standing on the side of this mountain where you've got the observatories in the background on one side. You see Maui in the distance. You can look down and see the ocean.
You're pretty high altitude, right? Reasonably so.
You're at about 4,000 feet elevation, and it's just these panoramas that you don't see anywhere else. On occasion, and more often than not nowadays, you would see either an endemic eo, which is the Hawaiian hawk, which is endangered, or the Hawaiian owl, the pueo, which is also endangered. And they are not only back on the property, they are living and thriving and reproducing.
A monocrop, there's always a downside to that. Tell us about diversity.
There is, and that was one of the things that we were very careful to avoid. Beside selecting over 200 different genetic koa species, we are also planting in another 24 different other tree and understory species as well. So this is truly a diverse endemic forest.
And again, backing up square one, your entire operation is a nonprofit.
The legacy program is, yes. That's entirely nonprofit. The tour component works in conjunction with the nonprofit to help plant legacy trees for guests who want to come up and experience that.
Tell us about the tours. I understand that you're connected with a helicopter company so you can see the forest from the air.
Yes, we're trying to create new ways for people to experience the planting of trees. So obviously you can plant trees through hiking. We have ATV tours. We now have helicopter tours. We will soon have off-road Segway tours, and on Oahu we will have helicopter and horseback riding tree planting tours as well.
But right now in time, you have just an operation on the Big Island, right? So you're getting going on Oahu at this moment in time.
Yes, we're planning to roll out on Oahu in the first quarter of 2016.
So once you start your planting operation, what is going to be in conjunction with that? Are you going to do a visitor center, an interpretive center?
We are. Some of the sites that we're looking at, in fact, all of the sites that we're looking at, have components which are intricately tied to the Hawaiian culture. And we think that's a really important component. This isn't just an environmental act. This is a cultural component as well. And the Hawaiians were very much tied to the environment as part of their culture.
Talk a little deeper about your vision, how you see it working in conjunction with that indigenous people and the Hawaiian culture.
Well, there's a number of things that we've started to develop here. And one idea is that people think that just because you put a forest in, that any economic use goes out the window. And that's not the case. We're developing food forest concepts and products that no one's developed in the past that are highly profitable. And again, in this particular case, the proceeds all go back to reforestation. But from an individual landowner standpoint, that could become an income stream. One of the things that we've done is we've created the first ever honey made from koa blossoms. We had only mentioned it on Facebook briefly, and the entire year's production was sold out in about 30 hours. And we have a wait list of about 1,500 jars at this point. We did create, in collaboration with Kona Brewing Company, and they had produced the first ever, it's a limited edition, it's a Koa Honey Wheat Ale, which was rolled out about 2 weeks ago and is in 70 locations around the islands.
But that's probably going to sell out pretty quick too, right?
The sales have been very well to the point where they're going to actually redo this next year as well.
What we're really talking about is a multi-dimensional world, in that I'm listening to you and I'm going, what a great tourism model. Let's talk about that aspect of it.
I think that, and for myself being once a tourist here, when I came to Hawaii, it wasn't for surf and sand. It certainly wasn't for shopping. I wanted to experience the culture and the environment. And Hawaii is known as the endangered species capital of the world. And for good reason, the habitat that's here is disappearing at an alarming rate. And with that will go watershed, which feeds the entire island. And there's other issues too, but those were the main ones.
Speaking of endangered species, you were talking to me earlier about a bird that has like one little habitat left.
Yes, just to, for instance, just upslope from where we're located.
On Mauna Kea.
On Mauna Kea is an area that is the last known habitat for the palila bird, which is an endemic bird, and there's very few of them left. Depending on who you talk with, there is anywhere from 200 to 1,800 birds left. It doesn't really matter which number it is. It's a terribly low number. And putting back these forests could well save species like the palila bird.
I've been with you up to the ranch, and I think that journey of getting there is an essential part of the day, of the experience. You go Hilo side, and then you go what, the Maumaloa Highway?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a couple ways you can get there. The Big Island is called the Big Island for a reason. It's magnificent, and the scenery changes as you drive. It isn't like Montana, where it's going to be just like one end and the other. We do pickups and deliveries from both the Kona and the Hilo side, or people can drive there themselves. Either way, it's a great ride. It's about an hour from Hilo and a little more than that from the Kona side.
For further information,
If you go to legacytrees.org, you can learn all about this project.
Very, very cool. Jeff Dunster, it's been so wonderful to reconnect with you and see you here in Waikiki. And I look forward to seeing you in Mauna Kea sometime. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Postscript Hawaiian Chant was performed by Native Hawaiian Cultural Advisor Clifford Naoli, recorded live at the Sheraton Ka'anapali on the island of Maui.